Hey, it's Jacob Goldstein from Business History. In our new series, American Genius, we tell the stories of three great writers who changed the way business works in America. Our first episode is about Benjamin Franklin, who, among many other things, was a best-selling business writer. Take a listen.
He's writing this much later in his life, consciously creating this image of himself. And I do want to emphasize how unusual this model is at the time, this self-made man myth, because you don't want to be self-made. It's low class to be self-made. You know, this idea that we have today is the opposite, right? And it comes from Franklin. Today, there is the derisive term nepo baby.
Well, exactly right. And these days, if you are a billionaire, you had better have a Benjamin Franklin story about starting in a garage, coming up with the idea from nothing.
And here is Benjamin Franklin inventing it right before our eyes.
This has been brought to you by Odoo. To listen to more of our American Genius series, listen to Business History. New episodes release every Wednesday on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor to New South Wales. Jeremy Zakas reporting on El Nino comes to Australia, drier and hotter, and that means bushfires. Jeremy, a very good day to you. We start with where you are right now, New South Wales. You tell me that your weather is beautiful, but high winds are expected. What does that mean? What have you been warned about? Good evening to you.
G'day, John. Yes, we have an absolutely fantastic day out there. We're expecting 26 degrees Celsius, so it's a nice 80 to 90 sort of temperature range throughout the day. But the problem is right now, we're also expecting winds. And when I say winds, it's not just your usual blow through, it's a little bit annoying type of breeze. We're actually going to be getting up to 90 kilometers an hour gusts of wind throughout the day, and this is for most of the day as well. So 90 kilometers an hour is around about 50 to 60 miles per hour. And while on any given wintry day, that's not a bad thing, it's just an annoyance because it's cold, it's damp. When you get it in a 26 degrees Celsius heat and it's absolutely dry, it becomes very catastrophically dangerous. And it's catastrophically dangerous so much so that over the last few hours on my cell phone, I've been getting warnings from our local Bureau of Meteorology, our local councils, to start preparing to enact fire plans here in New South Wales, because those winds are coming in from the north, which is where the hottest parts of the winds tend to come from. And there is every chance that any fire that starts today is going to take hold very, very quickly and become catastrophic. So, John, basically, we are actually now in a fire watch situation here in New South Wales.
We head north to Queensland, the Queensland town of Landsborough. This is Nine News reporting, which is described as 20 kilometers south of the Sunshine Coast. I'm looking at a photograph that looks like a world of flame. So Queensland is burning now, and there are several hundred fires. Are they in Queensland or all across the continent?
No, that's right, John. Mainly in Queensland right now, and the fires are actually up to around about 500. Across the weekend, there were 400 taking hold. They have increased overnight. And just to put it in context too, the Sunshine Coast is not very far from the capital of Brisbane. So if you have a look on a map and have a look at the state of Queensland, which is on the top right-hand corner there, Brisbane, the city itself, is on the southern part of the state. And the fires, pretty much if you draw a line from the southern part, almost right up to the top of Queensland, they're all along the line along the eastern part of the coastal areas. So these fires are actually in inhabited areas, which is what's making them so dangerous. And add that with the winds that we'll also get here in New South Wales today, you can almost guarantee, John, there are going to be more fires by the time today is through.
The fires, I learned from Daniel Claude, whose book, A Future in Flames, Jeremy and I will be discussing on and off over these next months. I've spoke with Daniel about her book, and I'll be playing that interview soon enough. The fires are half, up to half, arson. People set fires. The other half is lightning, or fires that didn't burn out after they were first discovered. Now, there's a spectacular photograph from Australia of lightning strikes. Is this a time of year you see a lot of lightning strikes? Do you see them like as spectacular as that in New South Wales?
Yes, we do. We do. Mainly in the northern part of New South Wales, where the tropical temperatures or the tropical climates are really enforced right now, where you get that real humid weather and that just generates a lot of storms. But Here in Sydney, absolutely we do. And that's what is the most dangerous part about this time of year. We get those rolling storms that blow in from the ocean, and then they end up going over the Blue Mountains and our national parks. And because it's tinder dry out there, the lightning strikes effectively start small spot fires all over the place. And because a lot of our national parks are so inaccessible, actually being able to get in there for the firefighters is a problem. You just can't get to those fires quick enough. And so on a day like today, while we don't have any thunderstorms forecast for most of the day, the problem is we have had some up in the northern reaches throughout the night, certainly have had more up in Brisbane. And because the wind is going to be moving so quickly, some of those small spot fires that may have been created by the lightning strikes, they could be smoldering right now, which means as soon as you add just a little bit of wind into it, they'll flare up again. So, John, honestly, arson is one of the big problems we have in Australia, and touch wood, we don't actually have arsonists out today creating fires. But lightning, it is actually lightning that causes the most fires and causes the most devastating ones.
I learned from Danielle that you have such a thing as total fire ban days. Is this one of those, Jeremy?
This is absolutely one of those. And what that does mean is that literally you cannot have any fires whatsoever outside. You cannot have any barbecues. You certainly cannot burn rubbish. If you have a metal workshop or you do a lot of metal grinding, you cannot do that right now. Anything that creates sparks is illegal and it is law enforceable too. So if you are caught by the police, you'll be fined. And in some cases, in extreme cases, you will go to jail. So we are currently experiencing a total fire ban day today as we speak.
Now, the genius of Australians is that they're a very large community over a continent. In other words, they get along with each other. And I learned from Danielle that the first fire brigades were formed at the end of the 19th century, when there weren't very many people in Australia, and it was the insurance companies who had the initiative. There have been big ones ever since. The big one Danielle concentrates on is 1939, a very big fire, burned a lot of people. And after that, fire brigades were located, were organized in the states. So Jeremy in New South Wales has a volunteer fire brigade, fire brigades by neighborhoods and by councils of 70,000 people, according to this. This book is 10 years old, so it's probably much more than that now. The northern people are organized. There are 70,000 in South Atlanta, no, 18,000 in South Australia. Victoria has 66,000. So you have volunteer fire brigades, and the people who go out and fight shoulder to shoulder with your professional firefighters. Correct me if I get this wrong, Jeremy, because I'm just learning about it. So we don't have, to my knowledge, such a service here. We have a national fire brigade, and California has firefighters. They're all pros. They're paid, and they're insured. So you have a different system, but without those volunteers, the firefighters would be overwhelmed. Now, Jeremy, these fires move very quickly. Well, you mentioned the wind. Do they skip over roads the way they do in California? Can a fire be on one side and then not come up to the edge of the road, but you look across and all of a sudden it's across the way. Is that what happens?
That is exactly what happens. And in fact, in the very high extreme conditions, when you do have high winds like we're getting today, they'll actually skip suburbs. And we've seen this a lot in places like Canberra and some of the more hilly areas of New South Wales, and hilly areas, not talking about massive mountains, but areas where the hills are just big enough that they create large wind systems that effectively create a fan forced oven effect. And what will happen is the fires basically will burn one hill, they'll completely skip another one because the wind pushes the embers and pushes the flames basically far enough across that they'll actually get the next suburb over. And that's the biggest concern, and partly why we're lucky we do have a rural fire service, which here in New South Wales, I've been led to believe, is now around about 100,000 people, 100,000 volunteers, because we have such a large state. But that's why the rural fire service, who are spread out so well, are really critical, because as soon as that fire skips a fire line, skips across the road where it's unexpected, we do at least have another fire service normally in its path that can react and get there much quicker than, say, if you had a metropolitan service or just a routine fire service in the city is having to get out to it. So it's almost like we have our natural fire breaks all ready to go at any given moment. But the volunteers do a great job. And honestly, they train hard. They train every week and every weekend. And they, for all intents and purposes, are really professional firefighters. It's just that they don't get paid.
These are recommendations for preparing your home. This was done by the Country Fire Authorities of Victoria 10 years ago. I wanted to go through some of these and see if that you can explain them. Ensure any external timber cladding is regularly maintained and all gaps are sealed. What does that mean?
Oh, that basically means is that if you do have a timber deck or you have some kind of balcony or any timber outside the home, especially in the older houses, it is treated. So basically has fire retardant lacquer on it, fire retardant paint, and it's not cracked or chipped to allow basically the wood to be exposed. And then as well, any gaps. So we're talking about gaps in underneath your house, basically airflow gaps or underneath the gutters where older homes, they'll tend to have basically openings which will allow air through the home. Being such a hot country, of course, we try and get air into our houses, making sure you have mesh. So metal mesh on top of those, basically to stop any embers, any of those burning little bits of wood getting through them and into the cavities in the home. Because, John, the reality is most homes in Australia burn down in bushfires if they're not hit directly by the radiant heat and by the fire. It's those small embers that get in, especially under the eaves and the roofs, and then they'll just smoulder sometimes for a matter of hours and then take hold. But if you can stop that, you can at least stop those delayed start fires. So that's what it means. It means really tighten up your home and make sure it is very fire retardant.
Fit leaf guards to gutters to prevent buildup of leaves. Boy, is that a practical idea. That'd be a good idea anywhere, given the rains are coming. So what we have here is the house is a target of the embers, right? That's what really is the scary part. The fire doesn't need to come up to your property and burn you with radiant heat. It can destroy you from a distance as it moves past you with those embers.
And that's right. And the thing is, too, and it's not just talking about a couple of 100 meters ahead of the fire. There have been fires reported ahead of fire fronts up to 5-10 kilometers on very windy days where the embers have taken into the atmosphere and have come down in some areas. And people haven't cleaned their gutters. People haven't looked after their homes, and spot fires have begun. So we're always taught here that while it's very rare to get something 10 kilometers ahead of a fire front, if you see a fire on a hill that might be a kilometer away, be prepared to see your roof starting to catch fire, because those embers, and I've seen it myself actually in real life, they do start to fall down well ahead of the fire front, and they are still burning. So it is, the embers are the worst enemy of houses, and getting into those gutters early and cleaning them out, getting the mesh onto the guttering as well, stopping the embers falling inside the actual cavities of the home, that's the way you save your home if it's not going to be hit directly. So it's very important.
Daniel also said there's common sense about stay or go, and families need to have meetings beforehand and decide, are they going to stay or are they going to go? Daniel said when the children were small, it was always go. Now that they're grown up, now she wants to stay and get ready. Are you a stayer or a goer with a small child, Jeremy?
Well, John, I'm actually a stayer because we are in a new home which has actually been built for fire areas. So we've got actual fire retardant cladding on the outside. Our roofs are actually built to be completely sealed, and basically we have no trees around us here. So with exception of a couple of pine trees out the back, which are actually on another property, we have complete clear ground. And the reason why we stay as well is we do have the firefighting equipment if we do get small fires here, is that we are living in an area where there are, I guess you could say, narrow choke points for the roads. And what's been found in the past is that if there's suddenly a mass panic or an evacuation, the roads are actually the most dangerous place. So in areas where you don't have a lot of exits or entries to a certain area, the authorities actually recommend you stay, because if you get on the roads, you may in fact be harmed in an accident or may in fact get caught on the roads during the fire front, which is a lot more dangerous than being in your home. So I guess I'm lucky, John. This house being new is basically a big fire retardant right. Sort of area. It's a safe area. But honestly, there are a lot of older houses in this area, so I suspect a lot of my neighbours will definitely be go.
Right. So what we have here is the newer building codes have been adjusted to anticipate those ember floods that take down the older houses.
That's exactly right. And the older houses, especially here in southern Sydney, you do get some that were, built around the 1930s and 1940s, which have a lot of that wood, have a lot of that balcony, wooden balcony type awnings that will catch fire. And while a lot of them have been updated and improved, it's actually not illegal to leave them in their current state. So while the new building codes, you must build to a certain standard, and it's very much a fire safety standard, the older buildings can still exist without having to be updated. There's no reason for a builder to put any more money into it to fix it. So some of those will be in a lot of trouble if we do get fires through. But at the same time, too, a lot of people in those homes will choose to stay because they know how to deal with fires. They've been around long enough. And that just means, like, you have your own water pump, you have your own water source, and you're basically prepared once the fire comes. So it's an individual choice, really.
Now it's early spring. Jeremy's going to be like this for months. And the really bad fire season doesn't happen until what, January? That would be the big one.
January, February. In fact, that's where we're expecting the peak of this fire season, although you wouldn't think it given how many fires we already have in Queensland right now.
Jeremy Zakas in New South Wales. We're headed to the Creatures, who are also keen on avoiding as many fires as possible. We'll begin, however, with one smart magpie. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.